I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
What happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare?
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from
you
evil.
Want a negotiated settlement to what's happening in Ukraine.
Right. And we made it. We were ready to sign it, and the war would have been over long ago, 18 months ago.
Donald Trump notching another win overnight in Nevada, winning support from the majority of the state's Republican caucus-goers, according to an NBC News projection.
First of all, there's no such thing as parental rights in Canada. There are parental responsibilities. And in Canadian family law, the primary responsibility of parents is to support and affirm their kids.
Many American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is your judgment. That is your judgment.
To use the dollar as a tool of foreign policy struggle is one of the biggest strategic mistakes made by the U.S. political leadership. The dollar is the cornerstone of the United States power, but they won't stop printing.
Initially, the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in. I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli side.
Frankly, trying to say that the reason a jury wouldn't convict him is because he's elderly and didn't mean to do it or whatever is silly. A jury wouldn't convict him because he cooperated and immediately wanted to give over the documents, wanted to give them everything, and never tried to mislead them, never tried to hide the documents, never did the stuff that the guy with the orange face down at the golf club did.
Mr. President, do you take responsibility for at least being careless with classified material?
I take responsibility for not having seen exactly what my staff was doing. It goes in and points out things that appeared in my garage, things that came out of my home, things that were moved not by me, but my staff.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily Live, Washington, D.C. Today is February 9th, 2024, Anno Domini. Ladies and gentlemen, we do have breaking news at this moment. Vladimir Putin, who has taken Tucker Carlson captive, unfortunately, at this time, has invaded Gaza across the Mexican border. At this moment, tens of thousands of poor refugees are streaming out of the area into parts of El Salvador, Bukele, of course, his forces defeating them, sending them directly to the gulags. But people are still asking. People are still asking, when will the Antarcticans get involved? And really, you have to understand the intrinsic nature of the arguments and the conflict between the Antarctican people and the Hyborians. You must go back to the ancient times of the mythological age, 898 AD, the forging of the great promo codes by the priest king Michaelis Lindelius, the sleep. Yes, so that he could give his sleepless powers and sleepless premise prowess to all. Look, folks, there was a great interview, Tucker Carlson, Vladimir Putin last night. Very interesting situation where I think that for a lot of people that are trying to understand the world that we live in, for a lot of people who try to understand what is going on in our world, you can watch the interview, and I watched the interview. You can say, I agree with some of the things that the guy said. I disagree with some of the things they said. But here's what's interesting. Russia currently has a president who can sit down and give you history back to the 12th century of his people and rattle off the GDPs of various nations and trading blocks off the top of his head And the United States, on the other hand, has a president who is essentially a vegetable. It's not just me saying that. That's the special counsel report, which came out yesterday, saying that Joe Biden couldn't be found or couldn't even be charged because there's no way we could convict him. We couldn't even establish mens rea, criminal intent, because we can't find any intent. He doesn't remember when he's vice president. He couldn't tell you even within a date range when his son died, his oldest son, Beau Biden, when he died. And this guy clearly has visible memory issues, to which came up, of course, Biden in a feat of, and you'll see this with people as they get older, we all get there, that they'll want to prove that they're still young, that they'll want to prove they still have their intellectual and physical prowess that they did when they were younger. That's why he's always trying to climb up the high stairs, et cetera. That he calls this snap press conference that his staff did not want, and, you know, completely makes a fool of himself and says that Mexico has a border with Gaza. Folks, this is the world in which we live. And to help us understand it, Darren Beatty will be here now. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode. And we're putting them out every single day of the week.
When I grew up in the hood, I rolled with Bloods. And them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here live, Human Events Daily, Washington, D.C. Guys, I got to ask, have you ever had a conversation with someone, and the next thing you know, you're getting ads for products that match exactly what you were just talking about? Well, between government, big tech, corporate America, and criminals, your privacy is compromised 24/7. This is on top of the side effects from radiation that the cell phone companies swear is safe and brain-numbing effects of social media. So you can detox from your phone today with Silent. Silent is a light and portable Faraday sleeve for your mobile device. Show you how it works. It will protect your privacy, your security, your health. Patented Silent technology blocks all harmful radiation and wireless signals, giving you the peace of mind that your personal data never ends up in the wrong hand. Just like that. Go silent today at slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO and save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. Look, folks, I'm in the spotlight. I'm challenging the government, the Klaus Schwabs, the big corporate interests all the time. This is on top of the left. I have to protect my privacy at all time. And I'm so thankful that Silent was created. So go to slnt.com/poso. Again, that is slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO to save 15% on free shipping qualifying orders. All right, folks. So we're digging through the interview here with Putin, with Tucker, and we've got the great Darren Beatty of Revolver News to walk us through this. Now, Darren, you and I have chatted about Russia's geopolitics and the role of Russia in the current formulation of geopolitics here. This came up later in the interview. A lot of people, a lot of memes about the history segment of the interview, which of course informs a lot of the thinking in that part of the world. But I do think that there was something that came up later. There was a long discussion about Nord Stream 2, where Tucker essentially confirmed, or excuse me, Putin essentially confirmed that it was done as a CIA operation. But then additionally, he also spent quite some time speaking, maybe not to Tucker, but maybe actually making a pitch to Olaf Scholz and the people of Germany, saying, I'm more than willing to turn the pipeline back on because let's look at it. Olaf Scholz's government is completely collapsing. He's got the farmers rising up and protesting against him. There's Polish farmers, by the way, this morning that have started protesting as well. And so it got me to thinking that, is the great game back afoot, and is Russia attempting and was Putin potentially attempting to use this interview as a way to make a pitch to the German people? What are your thoughts?
Now, that's a very interesting point. Yeah, there are a number of things that struck me about the Nord Stream conversation. And one was sort of Tucker's question as to, let's start with Putin's answer. He said, it's basically the CIA. And the CIA was a recurring theme throughout the entire interview. This is not terribly surprising. I think maybe Putin ascribes an exaggerated importance to that specific agency, not that it's unimportant, but I think that's informed by his own experience within the Russian, you know, special services, as he calls them, and the CIA has always been their, you know, very recognizable counterpart, and that's, you know, in the Cold War and such. But he blamed it on the CIA, and Tucker, of course, had a personal alibi, so it wasn't blaming Tucker, but he said, you guys did it, and he said, you guys. It's interesting, he actually uses, if you look at it contextually, first he said, you guys did it, and then Tucker made a kind of good joke saying, well, I have an alibi, I was, you know, I was busy that day. But then Putin clarified and said, well, no, by that I mean the CIA, but that gives us a sense in Putin's mind, basically the CIA is the driving force of America. The CIA is America. That's like the core, that's the operating system. When he says you guys in the context of USA, effectively means CIA, which I think was an interesting sort of insight into the way that he thinks, which may be, you know, more accurate than many Americans, the way that they think of their own government and how it works. But then he went on to say, okay, it was the CIA. Tucker said, well, how do you know? And then Putin made the argument that, frankly, we've made very powerfully and persuasively in a number of fora, including an infamous war room appearance in which one woman maintained that Russia actually blew up its own pipeline, which I'm still kind of flabbergasted by. He said, look, it's not just the motive, but it's also the capability. And you have to look at the intersection between motive and capability. And with that, you know, you don't have a lot of options, and you're basically looking at the CIA, by which he means.
Which, by the way, in that very war room hit that you're describing, that's precisely what you and I were discussing. I think I was talking about capabilities, and you were saying, well, who benefits here? And at the time, I remember there was another piece of it that we brought up, because it's not just qui bono, right? Qui bono, who benefits, but also qui malo, right? Who suffers from this? And it was Germany. It was always the German people, particularly the German economy, which is driving so much of the instability right now, and why Olaf Scholz is currently, as chancellor, facing a vote of no confidence.
Right, exactly. I mean, Germany is, in a sense, collateral damage, but significant collateral damage, because Nord Stream was just as much theirs as it was Russia, maybe even more so. Right. Germany, that was their, you know, entry point into the relatively cheap energy from Russia. It's the most natural compatibility and complementarity you can think of between Germany and Russia. And, you know, there have been attempts to solidify this politically, for instance, under the administration of Schroeder, who is always a great friend of Putin's, and my understanding is still is. But Germany has taken a turn, and that was an interesting part of the question. But the first part of the question that Tucker asked said, well, if you have this evidence, why don't you present it before the world? That was one of the more interesting parts of the interview. And Putin basically said, look, on the field of mass propaganda, on public appeals, on the, you know, the global stage, there's simply no competing with the United States. The American machinery of propaganda, yes, would simply overwhelm any attempt of Putin to make such a kind of public, like Colin Powell type, you know, UN case to the global public as to who really did Nord Stream, even when, you know, the comparison with Colin Powell ends at sort of the public spectacle of it, because Putin has a much better case than Powell did, you know, making the case for the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction.
Well, you know, something that's actually interesting, can I just interject, yeah, that people are critical of the fact that Putin was making this historical explanation for the roots of the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. And something that I noted as well was that he could have attempted to make one of these Colin Powell-esque, you know, arguments to say, oh, we had information that the bio labs were about to be turned against us, or some type of, you know, WMD or, you know, some formulation that Ukraine was just about to attack us. But he doesn't do that. He instead goes on this very, very lengthy, very thorough treatise about the ancestral importance, religious and geographical and historical importance of these lands that are in question here. And, you know, where he could have easily played into, you know, sort of that Western apparatus and, you know, come up with some sort of, I don't know, James Bondian plot the way that the Bushes did. Yet he decided to not do anything like that. And in fact, there's nothing in the interview that comes anywhere close to it.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. And it gets to sort of the different mechanisms of propaganda and how propaganda, I mean, the U.S. is without a question the global leader in propaganda and has been for some time. That is truly, you know, with the recent hit of the movie Oppenheimer, the true super weapon of the United States has been for a very long time, our capacities in propaganda specifically. And Putin definitely understands that. But in Russia, it's very interesting that, and I think this is the case in Europe as well, an historical context, an historically based kind of justification for a war, it resonates more powerfully with the populace relative to what it would in the United States. The United States, America is kind of, you know, there's a trope in Europe, which I must concede has some validity, that, you know, Americans are somehow comically ignorant historically. And that, but I think that, you know, America in its essence is somehow ahistorical. It's detached in many ways from the West. It was an outpost of the West, but it's become something bigger and something fundamentally different. And the American people have been detached from history, and that's associated with the overwhelmingly successful and frankly historic imperial capacities of the United States, the manifest destiny. All of this is about sort of recreating something. Even the concept of a self-made man, you know, a man without a last name, or you're making yourself rather than a product.
This is the Great Gatsby, by the way. This is the thesis of the Great Gatsby.
It's Henry James, I think, kind of coined this concept in literature, but it's a specifically American idea. And also it's, you know, the idea of not remembering history. I forget who said this, but it was kind of insightful that part of, in order to have peace and therefore have commerce, you have to be kind of forgetful in terms of your history. Forgetting has a
yes,
has a like a positive thing, because you're not holding on to these centuries old grievances. And that's the thing, you know, the people, it's ironic, is that some of the people, the Americans who are most historically versed are frankly Americans with highly politically incorrect prejudices. And I think this reinforces the idea that sort of historical understanding often coupled.
A very, very quick break, but I really want to get into this point. This is deep.
There you talk about influencers. These are influencers, and they're friends of mine. Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack, he's done a great job.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here live, Human Events Daily, Washington, D.C. Darren, you were making a very interesting point about the ahistorical basis for relations that America has, as well as the, it's interesting in a sense, right? Because Putin on one hand, it starts off the interview with a long litany of, you know, historical grievances and historical examples of how the current conflict between the West and Russia has arisen. Yet at the same time, also is constantly saying, or at least, you know, and you people can believe him or not, right? I certainly disagree with a lot of the things that he said, but he also says that he's willing to make peace in spite of all of these grievances. So it's, you know, it's kind of a dual-edged sword there.
Yes, absolutely. And just to conclude the earlier point, there is something kind of essentially or broader, kind of characteristically ahistorical about the whole American enterprise and the American character and self-understanding. And so, and that's connected to the kind of propaganda that's continent, a Colin Powell type, you know, weapons of mass destruction. We have to fight them over there before they fight us here and interfere with our way of life and commerce and everything. That's much more resonant with the American appetite and sensibility. Whereas I think in Europe generally, and also in Russia, playing into historical narratives and grievances in that kind of detailed and sweeping fashion is it works. It just works a lot better for Russians and also for Europeans who have, I guess, are, you know, their thumos is deadened in many ways, but they still have in many cases the historical memory, and that's certainly consistent with my experience having lived in Europe for some time. And so, but as for the Nord Stream, so Putin says, okay, American strength is its propaganda. And he points out that, you know, even if I were to show to the global stage, no one would believe it because American propaganda would overwhelm it. But then let's get to Germany, because he does kind of, there was a lot of shaming going on, and perhaps justifiably so, because you, Tucker, raised a good question, like, look, this isn't just your infrastructure. This is Germany's infrastructure. This was maybe the biggest act of industrial terrorism ever. And the Germans have really haven't made a peep about it. Why?
Well, and Putin brings this up, and Tucker brings this up, and I really think that you and I probably are the only people in the West who have ever, you know, made this point on air. But, you know, to hear Tucker and Putin bring this up as well, and Putin even says, I'm not sure. Why wouldn't you? And this is where I'm almost wondering if he's, and people like to make these claims that Putin is, you know, sending messages, and he's attempting to manipulate domestic politics, and they're always looking for that. And, you know, perhaps, right? Perhaps you certainly can't count that out. You can't discount it. But at the same time, I do kind of wonder if he just genuinely is confused why Germany wouldn't bring up the fact that a NATO partner country was involved in this act of industrial espionage or industrial sabotage.
It's possible. My read on that is Putin is just extremely discreet and diplomatic. You notice there are many times throughout the interview where he would say his part of the dialogue in some discussion with another world leader, but he was always very discreet about what the other person said to, you know, protect the integrity of private conversations, which you have to do at that level. Otherwise, you're not going to have very productive private conversations. I think in the similar vein, it's like, look, if anyone knows Germany, it's Putin. He lived there. He speaks German. He was very close with Schroeder, and Schroeder was very invested in these pipelines as well. I think he pretty much understands what's, you know, kind of clear to me is that, see, you know, and that we've been talking about in several instances here is that, you know, Europe and, you know, Germany in particular has really developed into a vassal state of the U.S. It always was to some degree or another, but it operated within a range, and maybe the least amount of vassal state it was under Schroeder, who was a famous critic of the Iraq war and American foreign policy and everything. And now the pendulum has swung to an extreme position of subservience to the point of not, you know, really being sovereign in any recognizable sense. And that's really the best lens through which to look at its response to Nord Stream.
And it really is interesting as well, because on one angle, and now the Middle East didn't really come up during the discussion, which is something that I had been hoping and that they might get into a little bit, because, of course, Russia is in a bit of a box right now, whether or not they want to extend relations with Israel. We know that Putin and Netanyahu have historically had a pretty good relationship. But at the same time, Russia is very, very dependent on Iran right now for those kamikaze drones and the production capabilities to keep up this fight in Ukraine. And so obviously the current situation in Israel-Gaza has them attempting to balance out a neutrality rather than taking down any one side. And so the fact that it didn't come up is, well, you know, I guess you can't get them all in a 2-hour interview. But
right. And it's a great point. And in particular, it's kind of an interesting omission question, especially given how hard, almost to the point of parody, he leaned into this denazification narrative. And that's Tucker right, and asked, well, what the hell do you mean by denazification? You know, yes, there are, you know,
Hitler's been dead for 80 years.
Ukraine, but like, what does that actually mean? And then he goes on to say, well, it's a very much alive ideology and anti-Semitism, this or that. So that would have been a perfect occasion to bring up, you know, October 7th, this or that. But the fact that he doesn't indicates that he's walking a very delicate line, because geopolitically, Russia has to play footsie, or even more than footsie these days, with, you know, what we might generally refer to as the global South. And the global South has a very different perspective on the Israel situation. So you're right, that is an interesting omission, to be sure.
Right. And of course, this is a situation where, you know, he says again and again that, you know, you know, having spent time, and obviously people know Tanya's from that part of the world, born in the Soviet Union, that to them, the word Nazi or the word racist or fascist hasn't become, you know, overused the way that it has here. I mean, if it had some cultural valence in just 30 years ago, 20 years ago, even up to, I would say, Trump's initial run of 2016, these accusations were quite powerful. But then the problem was the Western media simply started labeling everything white supremacism. Showing up on time was white supremacy, and drinking milk was white supremacy, and all these different things. And so it eventually just kind of lost all meaning. However, in Russia, or at least in that part of the world, because people don't use these words and don't use these terms haphazardly, they do still carry a lot of weight, potentially too much. I personally, just watching that and looking at the body language of the situation, I think he genuinely believes that there is a problem with this in Ukraine. Whether he's right or not, you know, anyone could debate that, but I think that he was genuine.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Probably, you know, could be. But another point on the Israel thing. So he did not indulge in the opportunity to mention October 7th in the context of the whole anti-Semitism thing. But on the other side, maybe I'm reading too much into the Israel dynamic here, but on the other side, he did not mention Israel in the context of the conversation of lands should go back to their pre-World War II borders. So that could have been the other side. If he really wanted to throw a bone to the global South and to the, you know, the Palestinians, he could have said, well, you know, also Hungary, not only does Hungary have a right to Ukraine, but, you know, Palestine should go back to its, you know, its UN, you know, 1947 borders, or even before that. You know, he could have thrown that in, and he didn't. So he kind of studiously avoided getting into that from either side, it seemed like.
One of the interesting terms of phrase, and I haven't even really spent enough time digging into it, but he keeps talking about this theory of the golden billion, you know, and the golden billion. So I started to kind of scratch the surface of that last night. And it essentially says that the elites of the world, because of the way the resources are scattered throughout the world right now, that the elites set up the world in such a way that only about 1 billion people can live in development at any one given time, and that if half the population of the world started to consume resources at the same pace, then essentially the world would collapse. It's a bit Malthusian in a sense, but it was interesting that he actually mentioned this a few times throughout the course of the discussion.
That is interesting. And frankly, I'd never heard that phrase before, golden billion. So I'm just learning what it means for the first time. It's an interesting hypothesis. And it seems like I'd have to go back and see the, you know, the context in which he's done it. But it seems like something like, you know, one of those global South type heuristics of saying, well, you know, it's the basically the West being the golden billion in this case.
What was interesting, though, The context that he used it, and I know we have only about a minute left, but the context, I'm sure I'm going to dig into this more, as I assume you will as well. But he says today's golden billion. So the framing is that just because these countries are up now, doesn't mean it will always be this way. And of course, he brings up the fall of Rome. He brings up the Golden Horde and Genghis Khan saying, hey, you know, this was the largest land empire, two of the largest empires in the world, and neither of which really exist anymore. And I think he's kind of attempting to describe the West as the current golden billion. Darren Beatty, Revolver News, always a pleasure. I really appreciate your insights. Where can people follow you?
Revolver.news, we're cooking up something very big. So check the site. It's going to drop soon.
Are you pressure cooking something big by any chance?
Possibly.
Darren Beatty, always a pleasure, my friend. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you.
Revolver.news. All right, we got a lot going on. Climate change on trial and Pennsylvania election 2024. A lot of wood to chop. Human Events Daily continues.
Where's Jack? Where's Jack? Where is he? Jack, I want to see you. Great job, Jack. Thank you. What a job you do. You know, we have an incredible thing. We're always talking about the fake news and the bad, but we have guys, and these are the guys who should be getting Pulitzers.
All right, Jack Posobiec here, live Human Events Daily. But I want to take you, we're in Washington, D.C. I want to take you up to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the Great Outdoors Show that's going on. Mark Serrano is there covering for Real America's Voice. Mark, tell us about the event.
Jack, we're here at the Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg. This is a week-long event hosted by the National Rifle Association. Hundreds of thousands of people, great patriots, come through the doors here this week. Today, of course, is the apex. It's the crescendo when this group gets to hear Donald Trump speak at the presidential forum. Naturally, Jack, he's the only presidential candidate who will be here today. Donald Trump has spoken now, as of today, 8 times before the National Rifle Association. And in fact, in 2017, he was the first president since Ronald Reagan to address the NRA. So we've been through this hallway today, Jack, and I gotta tell you, there is this energy you can feel, this sense of mission and purpose. Here we are, February 2024, Donald Trump is on a tear through the early primary states, breaking record after record. And the people who are lined up here, thousands of people are lined up outside of this hall right now, starting to stream in. They're going to hear from Donald Trump towards the end of the business day. And there's this sense of purpose, Jack. You can just feel it as you engage people and you talk to them. They recognize what's at stake this year in this election, maybe more than any other year in history, that our Second Amendment right is on the ballot. And that they're going to hear from the leader of the America First movement today, the guy who represents them, represents the working people, the hunters, the outdoorsmen, hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans. The leader of that group is going to be here today, and he's going to talk about how, as of January 2025, he will defend the right to keep and bear arms greater than any president in history, and God knows, much greater than Joe Biden.
Mark, that's incredible. I wanted you to stay tuned right there, folks. Mark will be there throughout the day, throughout this event. President Trump to speak there. Pennsylvania, obviously a key state, the keystone state. And what can I say? I'm a little bit biased to it being a son of the great state of Pennsylvania itself. Daniel Turner from Power of the Future joins us now. Daniel, last time we had you on, we were talking about this case between Michael Mann and Mark Stein. Tell us very quickly, what was the case about? And we now have a verdict. So tell us, first, what was the case and what has it come to? Defamation.
It was a defamation case where Mark Stein, who your audience I'm sure knows, he was a regular fill-in for Rush Limbaugh, may he rest in peace, a journalist, author. Mark Stein's one of the great American voices, not American, he's Canadian English. He's one of the great freedom voices. And he wrote a blog post 15 years ago, criticizing Michael Mann, the climate change scientist, and Michael Mann sued him for defamation. And here we are 15 years later. They chose Washington, D.C. as the venue. Although Mark is from New Hampshire and Michael Mann lives in Pennsylvania, somehow the court ended up in D.C. And the verdict was so quick, and it came back guilty. You're not allowed to criticize climate scientists. You're not allowed to criticize probably COVID scientists next. Real aberration of justice. Mark Stein, I believe, is going to appeal, but it was really, really very disappointing. I was genuinely sad when this verdict came in last night.
So let me get this straight.
The idea that it was defamation, right, for Mark Stein to do this, wasn't he simply coming out and saying that he disagreed with the findings from Mark Stein's research, this hockey stick graph? How is that a criminal or a civil level of defamation? I just don't even understand how that happened.
Well, that's the problem for defamation, and I'm not an attorney, but for defamation to be found guilty, a couple of things have to be met. It's not just saying defamatory things. It's not enough to have your feelings hurt, right? You have to show that you knew what you were saying and publicizing to be false, but you did it anyway. And you have to show that you harmed this person in some material way. It's not just enough to say, I didn't like what he said. And Mark Stein's attorneys demonstrated that Michael Mann, since publishing this hockey stick, has grown wealthier, more famous. He is on yachts with Leonardo DiCaprio. He's flown around the world as a guest speaker. He introduced either Bill Clinton or Al Gore or someone at one of the Democratic conventions. I mean, Mark Stein has done nothing but grow in power and prestige. And so there is no defamation grounds. But again, they chose D.C. because they wanted a jury who is predominantly very, very liberal and who would not side with the facts. They would side with the emotions. And climate change is all emotion.
And this really is amazing to me. So that you have I know that you were holding out some hope for this case, man. But when I heard that this venue got moved to Washington, D.C., I said, look, I got to put it in the same context of all the D.C. trials that I've sat through, whether it be General Flynn, whether it be Papadopoulos, whether it be Bannon, whether it be Navarro, and particularly through the voir dire, which is the jury selection in these cases. Now, those were criminal cases. This was a civil suit. But it's the same jury pool. And the D.C. jury pool, I'm sorry, they are just not ever going to side with anyone who's associated with the right, associated with Trump. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't say this, that Peter Navarro, by the way, just lost the ability to stay out pending appeal. That decision came out last night after the show.
I saw that.
So this is a guy, he refused to speak to the Jan 6 committee. He was held in contempt of Congress. Now he was sentenced to 4 months in prison, and they are saying that he must go behind bars even while he's appealing this thing. By the way, this isn't some like hardened violent criminal. Of course, we know that DC, when you're a hardened violent criminal, they just let you back out on the street to kill more people.
Yeah. And the frustrating thing here is that Michael Mann did admit under oath he has yet to pay his attorneys and he is not indebted to them. So basically he's saying someone else is paying the bill. We know there are lefty groups like the Climate Science Legal Defense Fund. They're funded by leftist billionaires. So Michael Mann does not have to pay any money come out of pocket for this. I'm sure Mark Stein did. And so it raises the question, what's the incentive if someone else is allowed to pay your bills? Why not sue everybody all the time? Why not have every leftist sue everybody on the right nonstop if leftist billionaires will pony up the money? Mark Stein made the case. Michael Mann didn't sue him in any of the Commonwealth states because all the Commonwealth nations, because all the Commonwealth nations have a rule that in defamation cases, the loser has to pay the winner's attorney's fees. We need that rule in America because otherwise, let's just sue each other nonstop if George Soros will pay the legal bills. And this is 15 years in the making, Jack. So what is the statute of limitation if George Soros was willing to pay your attorney's fees? It's an aberration of justice. It sets a terrible precedent that we're not allowed to criticize climate. We're not allowed to criticize, like I said, COVID. And who knows what our overlords next will determine is above criticism. And if you do, if you write a blog post on National Review 15 years ago, we're coming after you.
Well, and that's the part that just really flies in the face of everything that we are talking about recently. You know, we say that we're the free country. People are, you know, they were critical of Tucker and Putin and saying, oh, well, you know, you're in Moscow talking about free speech. We have free speech in America. Do we? Do we really? are we the country that has freedom of speech? Are we the country that allows people to protest at the U.S. Capitol without shooting them in the neck? Are we a country that has free and fair elections? Are we the country that allows people to say whatever they want on the internet? Are we the country that doesn't lock up our political opposition? And oh, by the way, the leader of the political opposition that's currently running for election the previous president. I mean, again, like, people want to make all these criticisms, say, oh, Russia, Russia, Russia. But what have we turned into when we are the country that's doing all of those exact things right now? And so, you know, I could certainly disagree or agree with a lot of different things that came up in that interview last night. But when it comes to the conduct of our country as being some sort of moral arbiter, no, I think we've completely lost that. I think we've completely lost it. One more minute to the break.
Do you have time? Yeah.
One minute. Go ahead.
Yeah. The concern I have here is that, you know, you have big government colluding with the tech industry to censor speech they don't like, especially as we've seen when it comes to COVID and more when it comes to climate issues. And climate and COVID are the foundation for hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars of spending, of profiteering, of control, exertion of control by a government. So if the science you're not allowed to criticize, you can't criticize anything.
Can't criticize science, can't criticize the scientists. I mean, it's basically like we have blasphemy laws come back, but against a different kind of priest. Daniel Turner stays with us here. Power to Future, Human Events Daily continues.
Working long hours, I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. Daniel Turner is our guest. Power to Future, you got a new op-ed in the New York Post, where you announced that you are filing a lawsuit of your own, not against a climate scientist, but potentially one of the priests of the climate change agenda, the great proselytizer John Kerry. Why are you suing John Kerry?
John Kerry is a public servant. And as a public servant, and you know this, having you spent your time in government, you don't have secret missions, secret meetings. Maybe you did, because I know you worked in intelligence. But someone like John Kerry is not in clandestine. He's not in the CIA. He's not at defense. So John Kerry has refused to tell the Congress, and in our case, using the Freedom of Information Act, refused to disclose very simple facts like who's on his staff and how are they hired and what are their names and what's his mandate and what are his goals for his office and what's his budget. John Kerry just said, I'm not sharing that information. I don't have to. The Freedom of Information Act exists for this purposes. And the reason why this lawsuit is important is because we're all on the downstream of Biden's green agenda, right? 3 years in, look at your food prices, your grocery prices, your utility bills. And they celebrate that gas has come down, and it has, but it's still a dollar more a gallon than when Biden took office. All of this is the green agenda. The green agenda is hatched in John Kerry's office. And we have a right to know who he's meeting with, what outside groups, what international groups, because we are feeling that green agenda. John Kerry can't say, I'm not telling you. So lawsuit was our only option.
And so the goal here, then, specifically looking at this, and Kerry, of course, I believe he's actually outgoing in terms of this. And the great, the artistic John Podesta is going to be coming in to that same office. Do you think that the new administration there will have any change in the status, or and really, what is it that you're trying to find by getting all this information out?
Well, everyone in government has meetings and they talk to outside groups. They talk to groups back in the day like mine. We have a right to know who John Kerry's meeting with. We have a right to know what money he has and what checks he has written. And the fact that he refuses to tell us that is pretty shady. John Podesta is going to come in with an even larger checkbook because he's been controlling the so-called slush fund from the Inflation Reduction Act. And that's, you know, the Wall Street Journal says could be upwards of $1 trillion in unappropriated funds. Who's knocking on John Podesta's door? What do they want? What are they spending money on? And again, when you are a public servant working on behalf of the American people with American tax dollars, you are not allowed to have these private meetings. You're not allowed to have a private life. And look, even I mentioned the defense, but there is still some caveats. Look at all the problem that the Secretary of Defense got into, saying, no, I just didn't want to tell you. You don't have the right to not tell us you're going to the hospital. You don't have the right to tell us you're not going to disclose what conversations you're having. And so, yeah, the green stuff is always shady, right? The money is shady. The groups are shady. And John Kerry cannot hide behind, I don't want to tell you what I'm doing. So, yeah, trust me, I don't want to have a lawsuit. Lawsuits are expensive. Ask Mark Stein. They're cumbersome. John Kerry's got a lot more resources because he's got the government. But we have to. We have to know who he's dealing with, because the entire green agenda is based on lies. And it's trillions of dollars that we've wasted because of people like John Kerry. And they can't hide any longer.
Well, and you look at some of these situations out there that where the green agenda comes up and they say we're losing it, we're running out of all of this. And there was a term that that Putin actually used in the interview last night, and I thought it was really interesting. And I mentioned it with Darren Beatty, and it actually had to do is this theory of the golden billion, and essentially that all the resources of the world can only support about 1 billion people at a time. And I was like, wow, the president of Russia believes in that? I just don't know if that's true, that this idea that there's an incredibly finite amount of resources in the entire world, specifically, obviously, we're talking about someone who's got control of some of the largest oil and gas resources in the world. But I thought it was really interesting to hear him talk about it that way. I don't know if he meant it potentially in that sense. But, I mean, do you think that's right? Do you think that there's only a limited amount of resources in the world that can only sustain about a billion people at a time?
No, I think we have so many resources. The problem is we can't bring them to the surface. I mean, you went to Alaska. I know you've been there. You know how many resources are in Alaska, but they're underground and they can't be tapped. The congresswoman from Alaska, Mary Peltola, who's up for re-election, she's been tweeting about how Alaska needs more renewables. I was in Alaska last week. It was negative 26 degrees. Renewables were producing no energy whatsoever. The only thing keeping Alaska alive were fossil fuels. And here's your congresswoman saying, no more fossil fuels, we need more renewables. Look, I'm on the record supporting a competitor. I'm a personal friend of Nick Begich. I think he will be great. He's very, very much a politician in the line of Vivek. But how do you have a member of Congress who looks at her state and all of the vast resources in the state and says, no, what we're going to do is we're going to depend upon China and Washington, D.C., and build solar panels and wind turbines, which, by the way, as she was tweeting this, were doing absolutely nothing to help the people of Alaska. So I don't believe there are limited resources. I think there are so many resources, we just cannot bring them to the surface. We can't produce our coal. Biden and John Kerry wants to shut down all of our coal. Right?
By the way, when you say can't bring them, you don't mean that there's like a physical issue that we can't do it, or a technological issue. It's a political issue.
It's a political one. Political one. Yeah, they don't want those resources brought to the surface. They want those resources constrained and limited. They do not want more oil and gas. And that's the difference between us and them. Look at what happened in the past administration when we had an oil guy in the White House. We never heard about profiteering. We never heard about price gouging. Oil was at its lowest point in history. You never heard about pollution. We lowered emissions. That's what happens when you allow freedom to operate. We have the exact opposite now, and look at our energy situation.
Well, it's interesting too, thinking about the Russian context as well, because it's Putin who goes in, who nationalizes all the Siberian gas and oil infrastructure when he first gets into power, completely unlocks Siberia. Alaska kind of is like our Siberia in terms of natural resources, but we just let it sit there and we don't actually use them. How do you think he's got the leverage he has? Because he's utilizing his natural resources. You have the same, exactly. We don't do it. Daniel That's Turner, why. Where could people go to follow you? Where could people go to get in touch with Power of the Future?
PowerOfTheFuture.com. You can find me on socials, Daniel Turner, PTF. If you want to support our lawsuit against John Kerry, Lord knows we need help. So thank you.
All right, God bless, Daniel. You know, folks, look, it's a question. Do we want to be in a managed decline, or do we want America to rise as a powerful, great nation, one that it should be? Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission.